You're listening to Valley Public Radio. Alexander Micklethwaite joins us today on our program, one of the six candidates hoping to become the next music director of the Fresno Philharmonic. He's in town this week to lead the orchestra in a concert on Sunday at the Sorian Theater, featuring Berlioz's Symphonie Fantastique, Mason Bates' Mothership, and Mozart's Violin Concerto No. 5. A native of Germany, Micklethwaite is currently the music director of the Winnipeg Symphony Orchestra. He's also served as associate conductor of the LA Philharmonic and assistant conductor of the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, and he's appeared as guest conductor with the New York Phil and the symphony orchestras of Baltimore, Chicago, and Dallas, to name a few. Alexander Micklethwaite, welcome to Valley Public Radio.
Thank you. It's really great to be here.
A native of Germany, how did you manage to get down the path to pursuing a career as a conductor?
Well, that's a good question. So, worldwide, there are two ways of becoming a conductor. And the one is the German way, and then everybody else's.
Explain that.
Well, in Germany, as you know, there is a huge culture of opera houses. And all the famous conductors from the past, Karajan, Furtwängler, I mean, you name it, they all started as a repetiteur, as a pianist, in an opera house, at the very bottom of the totem pole, and then worked their way up. Then they were allowed to conduct the 10th or 20th performance of the Magic Flute or something. So, when I studied in Germany, this was the trajectory. Like, my friends, they went that route, you know? And I knew, well, what else is there?
That didn't seem appealing.
Well, it is. It was. Actually, my grandma was like in a small opera house and opera singer. So I kind of had this a little bit in my blood. But at that time, I started dating a girl in America. And she's not my wife for many years.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But the point is, though, I kind of realized, oh, there is in the States and also England and Finland, there's a different way. You study there, and then there are assistant conductor positions of symphony orchestras, which doesn't exist in Germany at all. And so I decided to study in the States, and then went that route in a way to kind of, become assistant, as you just mentioned, to the Atlanta Symphony and LA Philharmonic. So it was very different, but it suited me and my talents. So
there's such an amazing collection of great works from Germanic composers. You write, though, or you in another interview that I was reading, you said that when you came to America and went to Peabody, it was a big change for you, because all of a sudden, well, I'll let you explain it. Why was it a big change when it comes to the repertoire?
Well, thanks. Good research. So, yes, when I studied in Germany, I still can't believe it. It was like in the 90s. And my professors, they were still dismissive of like Tchaikovsky and the English composers.
They hadn't caught up with
those. Well, it didn't have the weight and the sense for them, in their opinion, sincerity of the like Bach and Mozart Magic Flute. You know, they are like the Bible. They're like religiously revered. And it was literally second rate, 100%. This is how I grew up. Sibelius, second rate. And well, when I came over to the States, oh my goodness, I was like in heaven. It was Baltimore, you know, Peabody Conservatory, yes. And I studied with a famous teacher there, Frederick Prausnitz, and he was wonderful in the sense that we were conducting everything from Mozart to Strauss to Elgar and Tchaikovsky. And it was really eye-opening and refreshing that everything is, in a way, a different kind of beauty and expression of the human spirit. And it was a real eye-opener.
What do you think makes a good or great conductor? What are the most important qualities from your perspective?
Well, a conductor is a communicator. He doesn't make music in that sense, right? The orchestra does it. And so he communicates and has a vision of the piece, how it was composed, and then 100, 200 years ago or 2 years ago. But then, first of all, gets that vision over to the orchestra in the performance, then creating a bigger picture, being in the zone, and then communicates that again to the audience or to a bigger, I don't know, the universe or something. And I love that. I really enjoy being that kind of conduit and trying to figure out what the right thing is at that very moment when I conduct.
we all know how musicians practice their craft, practice time every day or every week, what have you. When it comes to a conductor, though, you were talking about the assistant conductor positions that we have here in America and things. How does one practice one's craft and improve as a conductor and learn these skills?
Well, it was actually quite a long process, I must say. There are different parts. So one is the physical part. And one can think, well, if you look at this, at the stage, this guy moving his or her arms, well, I can do that. It's like you know, it's just like the simple gesture. But if you think about it, it's like a swing. It's like when you talk with like people that play golf or tennis to have your perfect swing and how long it takes to get that relaxed gesture that then catapults the ball in the right direction. And here's similar. To get the muscles the right way, relaxed and with the right amount of impact that you don't get tired over the whatever hour, requires the right swing. So this is one big part. The other one is to study the score and to learn to figure out how to make sense of all those thousands of little dots in a music score. So here, that's always like very exciting then for me to start a month or 2 months ahead of the concert to analyze it, to make sense of it, to structure it, and to study it, to prepare it, that I'm kind of like become one with that role, like an actor who becomes whatever, Hamlet or the Pirate of the Caribbean or something, you know. And same with me then, that I just, it's like a coat that I put on and it's just really natural.
Have you changed as a conductor? It's been 10 years since you took the position in Winnipeg, actually a little over that now, I guess. How have you changed? How have you grown?
Well, quite substantially, I think. I hope. Who knows? You have to ask the others. But in a way, like two things I want to mention. So one is that as a young conductor, I had problems actually leading in a sense to say, this is what I want. Instead of that, I was really collaborative and it was like, hey, you know, we are all grown-ups and what do you think? How do you want to play that Mozart phrase? And which is a way to, well, go about it. But after a while, the orchestra was like, man, just tell us what you want. And I mean, there must be, there are different kind of orchestras. But in this case, I just really started to have just for everything, okay, my vision. And now what I do actually is that I give certain windows where I say, okay, here, clarinets, we all know, I don't know, this melody in Tchaikovsky's Fourth Symphony, but I want that you completely take over. You conduct me and the rest of the orchestra. And I listen to you and you can be spontaneous, I don't care. I want that you make music. So I'm kind of trying to combine both worlds, that I really give the direction and then also give the times where it's completely free and we don't know what's going to happen, like an artist. So this one, and the other one is the emotional part, to be even in rehearsals. At the beginning, I was just compartmentalizing more. Rehearsals, I was just very head-oriented and controlled. And then the emotions came in the concert. I was like, let's do it all at the rehearsal. Let's get used to already the emotional part plus the, you know, both parts of the brain, left and right at the same time. And I'm still growing, obviously. But those are definitely two things that are kind of exciting.
It sounds different than the stereotype, and it is a stereotype, of what we think of when we think of Germanic conductors, or Furt Wangler or Karajan. What is that? What you're describing sounds very different. Is that maybe just a different generation, or is that a stereotype that perhaps is flawed in itself?
That's a good question. I think that, first of all, it was a different time. So it was definitely a time where authority was more or less not questioned, and you were the authority, could do whatever you wanted. And so there was a lot of power on that podium, and things changed drastically over the last even 20 years. So one has to have a very different approach, I think, approach on the one hand to musicians. And then I must say, it's weird sometimes with looking at those old videos of Karajan, they always seem angry. Oh, so serious. I mean, of course, there's time where it's serious, but gosh, I mean, music is everything. So also so fun and joyful, and why not reflect that in this moment? And sometimes I wonder if this was lost with those big maestros of that time.
If you just joined us on Valley Public Radio today, our guest is Alexander Micklethwaite. He is one of the six candidates vying to be the next conductor and music director of the Fresno Philharmonic. He leads the orchestra in a concert on Sunday at the Soroyan Theater featuring music by Berlioz, Mason Bates, and also Mozart. We'll talk about that in a moment. Before we do that, tell us a little more about you yourself off the stage, off the bandstand, so to speak. You mentioned your wife is from America and that you've moved here and now conduct the Winnipeg Symphony. Tell us a little more about what makes you tick away from your profession. What are some of your hobbies? What are those things? Who is Alexander Micklethwaite when you're not the conductor?
So yeah, there's several things. I mean, one, before I had a wife and kids, there was that Alexander, which was very, I did bike tours from Germany to Holland. I was very active skiing. I mean, it was part of my life with my friends and it was very fun, I guess. And I was never that kind of wonder child of the Simon Rattle-ish or Dudamel's. And, so fairly normal childhood, but with a great social network. It was very fun there. Then I mentioned earlier my wife, and she's a fashion designer. So just this fact opened my horizon. And there are fun stories that she can tell, like when she met me first, how I dressed with Birkenstocks and the whole thing. that was very different from what she was used to. Then we kind of lived in New York City together for a while, again without kids. And it was a great time of exploring the city and being free and witnessing her own career, you know, as she started in Ralph Lauren, Nautica and stuff. It was really a nice time. And now I must say, with the kids, I have two boys, now 13 and 8. The older one was born in Atlanta, actually, American, and the other one is Winnipegger, is a Canadian. And they are really, like, sometimes I wonder, are they my kids? How can this be? They're very sport-oriented. My older one is plays hockey, ice hockey. They both play, actually. So you stay there shivering, minus 20 Fahrenheit, outside with a cup of coffee and cheer for your kids. Something I never would imagine, you know, as a conductor, as a German conductor, to ever do that kind of thing. So those are things that kind of keep me grounded. And inspired, yeah, it's good.
Do you have musical interests outside of the classical realm?
Well, lots in a way. I mean, first of all, even in Winnipeg, I listen to NPR all the time.
Well, that's good to hear. And CBC as well, our good friends.
And CBC,
there.
Yeah. So, but besides that, we have a contemporary festival in Winnipeg every end of January. And hear contemporary classical music. And so lots of friends there. And those guys opened my doors to new worlds. And one of those, I remember 5-6 years ago, speaking of influences, the door of Icelandic music was open to me. And I flew there with my friend at Reykjavik. We met players from Sigur Rós and composers that Valgeir Sigurdsson, who was producer for Björk. So a sound work I had no idea about. It's so beautiful and so amazing. So yes, this is like, for example, one direction that I'm extremely interested and inspired by.
Moving on to some of the material that's on this weekend's concert at the Soroyan Theater with the Fresno Philharmonic, a very diverse collection of pieces. You start out with Mozart, Berlioz, and then Mason Bates. Do you see a common thread there, especially between the Berlioz and Mason Bates? You know, Symphony Fantastique, this almost psychedelic type of work, and then a piece with Mothership by Mason Bates that has electronic music and improvisation influences. Is there a common thread there?
Well, I mean, it's not even, because it's almost psychedelic. It is actually psychedelic. I mean, Berlioz literally take opium while he composed. And so Mason now, I don't think he took opium, but it is based on raves, of techno raves from the 90s. And he himself is a DJ. So and he wanted to write, Mason Bates now, wanted that work Mothership, he wanted to write a scherzo-type opener. And scherzos in the past were always based on a dance, waltz or something. And now he said, literally, I wanted to write a dance that people know, which is comes from techno. You know, you just stand there the 2 or 4 o'clock in the night and you kind of go at it. And that's what he wrote. And it's a really cool piece, actually. So, yes, I didn't think so much in those terms, but that you say it now, thank you. There is definitely that connection, yes.
So let's take a step back then. Obviously, the Germanic repertoire is paramount with your influences and things. Mozart's Violin Concerto No. 5. Tell me about that piece. What stands out to you?
You know, it is, he wrote, well, 5 official violin concerti, and he was only in his he was like 17, 18, 19 when he wrote them. It's quite amazing. You know how young he was, first of all. He was a pianist and violinist and soloist. So what stands out to me is, well, every movement, but especially the last
movement. It's Mozart.
Movement.
Right?
It's
exactly.
Mozart. But especially the last movement. It's so beautiful. So there's those, but there are 2 parts of this last movement. There is that kind of slow menuetish in 3 pattern, and then there is that middle part which is called alla turca, which in that time Turkey, of course, and which was the exotic, the most exotic one could go at that time, I guess, and where he has, it's in 2, and he has like patterns that are da 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 dim pam di da 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 dum. It's like chromatics up and down, and it's almost romantic. You kind of think, whoa, that's classical? No way. So it is really advanced and very smart and fun, I must say. And with Philip Quint, our soloist, it will be a real, real treat to perform this here.
And then tell me a little more about the Symphonie Fantastique. What a remarkable piece, truly, but what in your mind stands out from it?
Well, so one of my total favorite pieces, and one of the reasons, well, there's several reasons. The big catalyst right before that, it was composed right around 1830, 1829, and, well, when was it? 40 years earlier was the French Revolution. And the French Revolution was exploding, of course, and changed everything in Europe. And it changed the way how composers wrote music. So that work was the first of a major composer where the composer was born in 1803, was born after the French Revolution, and had nothing to do with the old system, meaning the old system where the composer was composing for nobility. Haydn was hired by the Esterházy court. And so he was not a free agent in that sense. He was working, had a salary from the count or whatever, Esterházy. So Beethoven was then the person who changed this whole thing. And Berlioz, well, he didn't write for God, or he didn't write for the classical idea of beauty. He wrote, in a way, under the influence of opium, just what was in him. And he was head over heels in love with his English actress, Harriet Smithson, and who spoke, by the way, only English, and he only French. So it was like this absurd kind of thing, you know? They couldn't really communicate. But where he, like, ran even after his lovers with a pistol, and it was, like, very dramatic, everything. And this all went right into his music. And this was so revolutionary. It had never been done before. And to have this, Beethoven just had been dead like 3-4 years, you know, and this huge jump forward is so amazing, and it's a real fantastic work, so I'm like really thrilled.
You've been all over the world as a guest conductor, leading orchestras, and the assistant and associate conductor spots in Atlanta and Los Angeles. You've worked with so many people. There are a lot of different ideas about how to make classical music, how to make the symphony orchestra a format viable in the 21st century with millennial audiences, with everyone's attention being glued to their smartphones now and the new era that we're in. How do you see the orchestra environment evolving and an orchestra like Fresno's fitting into that new era that we're in today?
Gosh, yeah, this should be like a whole session, actually. We should talk about this for like a whole hour. No, I mean, I think there are so many ways. It really depends on the leadership of a community and its orchestra. Because if you look North America wide, actually worldwide, there are like orchestras like San Francisco and MTT, so like successful, where he really connects with this with the city. And all Los Angeles Philharmonic, Berlin. I mean, there's really orchestras that are taking works that were written 200 years ago, but make it locally, really connect with their audience. And so I think there are so many ways to do this. Like, we just did Baylor Symphony Fantastique in Winnipeg, actually, with this performing, how do you call them, word artists, who kind of, like, hip-hop almost. And so we thought, well, how can... It was not a regular masterwork, not a regular classic, it was a special. We played the music, but then before each movement, this actor came up with, like, this rhyme form, very urban, but very smart, very fun, with the story of Berlioz, that artist who falls in love, just put in the 21st century, and with visuals that were done by some Icelandic videographer, and suddenly this whole work was like put into the 21st century, and the music sounded really contemporary. And we had a pretty full house and big party afterwards with a fashion show. It was like, wow. I mean, music kind of transcended. It was really now, you know, and this can happen in Fresno. And there are tons of those kind of connections that one can do, connect with different cultures, communities, and with their customs and dances or whatever, and put this together on the stage. So I'm very excited to do those, to find those linkages and make it now and current and have it talked the next day at the water cooler and stuff.
What do you look for in a community or in an orchestra as you go across the country and audition for various jobs like this? We often hear about what the orchestra is looking for in a conductor. What do you look for in an orchestra or a community?
Oh, it's mostly like open musicians, like from the musicians that they're just cool and just like you have fun, but then you work and you're open for new ideas and excited to practice that and then be like one, like to kind of get rid of this kind of, there's the maestro and at the end we are all together, I feel. And the more one creates that oneness, the better the performance. And it's like, you know, this team. And then we're back to that, the maestros of the past, I don't know, I don't believe in that so much anymore. Being in the zone is like a collective thing and can be quite powerful.
I'm sure it will be powerful on Sunday at the Saroyan Theater as Alexander Micklethwaite leads the Fresno Philharmonic as a guest conductor in this concert featuring Berlioz's Symphonie Fantastique, as well as Mason Bates' Mothership and Mozart's Violin Concerto No. 5. He is one of six candidates hoping to become the next music director of the orchestra. Alexander, thanks so much for joining us today.
Real pleasure. Thank you very much.